Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. As I've continued this Brain Matters series, I realize I've talked to physicians, I've talked to scientists, I've talked to researchers, I've talked to David Dodick, the chair of the American Brain Foundation, but I've never had a conversation with a spouse, a caregiver, or somebody who has a brain disease. So this morning, I am happy to welcome Joanna Heatwall. I've got a lot of questions for her, so she may actually be on here twice. Welcome, Joanna.
Thank you, Joanne. I know when I woke up this morning, I thought about the podcast, but then the second thing I thought was, I get to start my day with Joanne Smichael. Who gets to do that one-on-one, the Miss Positivity of the world? So we should do this every day, honestly.
You're funny, Joanna.
No, it's the truth.
Oh, thank you. So I know a bit about your career because I know you, and I know you were a dental hygienist, right? Is that it?
Yes.
And then you worked in long-term care in nursing homes. I don't remember what you did there, and how long were you in the long-term care world?
Well, I moved down to Florida in 2003 because my sister had 10 nursing homes that she was running. So I was fortunate enough to come down and work in marketing. So I would go around to all of the 10 nursing homes that she ran, and I would teach admission directors how to market, how to tour, how to talk to families, and just the whole admission process.
Okay. Still doing that?
No, I've retired.
Okay. Yeah. So since you were walking through nursing homes every day for the better part of what, 20 years, 15 years?
18.
Yeah. So then you had a kind of a sense of dementia. But before we get to that, you and Owen have such a wonderful love story. And I think that's where I'd like to start. Because you guys found love after divorce, being independent for a long time. I think you were both over 40. Or close to that.
Yes.
You met at church, right?
Yes.
And wasn't it your niece who fixed you up? Wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Jean played Cupid.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about the journey from the first date to the altar.
Well, I wish Owen was here to tell it because he told everyone we met, from Louise at Publix to everyone we met. He would always tell the story of how we met. And even later on, he would repeat it to them, even if he had already told them five times. Because he's a wonderful man, and I met him at church, and it sort of simultaneously happened. We were in the Easter Cantata. He was playing guitar. I was in the choir. And he told me, he looked up in the choir, and this is how he's very animated. And that's what I loved about him, because he was animated. He goes, I looked up in the choir and I saw those eyes. He said, and I just couldn't take my eyes off of her. And I always thought, oh, she's too pretty. She's got to be married. There's no chance for me. So that's his version. And then it just continues on, because we sort of met in the hallway of the church, and, you know, because he sort of initiated a hello and I said a hello. And then I had talked to Jean. She had told me there was this really nice man at church, and she really thought we might, you know, hit it off. And come to find out, it was Owen. and that's what's funny, because they thought it would be good. So after our sort of initial greeting, Brian is Jean's husband. Brian calls Owen and says, you know, we were thinking about this lady. It's my wife's sister. And she just came from down from North Carolina. She's going through a divorce, and we just thought y'all might hit it off. And her name is Joanna. And Owen's always like, Joanna, is it the same Joanna that I met and saw the eyes and everything? And he says, and we thought, would it be okay if we gave you her phone number? And yeah, he asked, first he asked, he'd like to give Owen my phone number. And Owen's like, yes. He said, well, I'm going to call her and ask her if I can give you her number. So, Brian's calling me. I go, yeah, I'll give you my number. So from that moment where we talked, we were together every night. Our first date was we came here and we sat on the couch and we talked for 4 hours.
I love it.
Basically, Owen talked for 4 hours. Because Owen comes from a Mennonite family, so they didn't watch TV. They didn't have, they talked and they read. And, I was totally different. I was raised Baptist, and here's this Mennonite. How does this work? But it did. And so then we went on casual dates, and one of them was sort of funny. I don't know if I could tell it, but it was sort of funny. I'll tell you. We went to this coffee shop, and we're sitting here, and all of a sudden, honestly, my bra came unlatched.
Only you, Joanna. Only you.
In this coffee shop, and my bra just comes unlatched, and I'm like, I hardly know this guy. And I'm like, okay, so I just need to go to the restroom. And so I'm trying to get up and I'm trying to keep things together and things not to fall off in the floor and everything. And I come back and I had to admit to it. And he just laughed and thought it was funny. And it, because it was, because only very odd things happened to me. I really could write a book about things. But from then on, I was doing a lot of traveling because I was going all around Florida, and we would talk and text. And I remember one day when I got to the hotel, he had sent this, he had bought a disc of Fernando Ortega, our favorite, and it was waiting for me at the desk when I got to the hotel. I mean, he would send me cards all the time. I mean, it was just like this fairy tale. He treated me like a princess. And of course, he was divorced, and I was going through a divorce. So we knew we had to wait. I mean, we knew we wanted to get married, but we knew we had to wait at least for a year. And so then, yes, he popped the question on Christmas Eve, and he had set up a whole nativity scene, and he had the diamond in the manger scene. I know. I mean, and the nice thing was, I had always told him that I wanted a husband that I could worship with. I wanted, that was my main thing, was I wanted someone to worship with. And he was it. I mean, he was just it. And so then, we got married, and we had great years, great years until,
Until let's talk a little bit about the until. When, what, how?
Well, I always thought Owen had like little quirks, and that was just his personality. And then, as we got into probably after about maybe 14, 15, man, 14 years, I noticed things. Owen could not never read a room. He could walk in, and how you can know when to speak, when not to speak, when not to interrupt. Follow the conversation. He just couldn't do it. I mean, and it's funny because he would always go, well, let me tell you how Joanne and I met. And then we would go into the, I saw the eyes. I mean, he just didn't know. And we would talk about it because if we saw someone at church and he would start talking, I would go, I'd have to sort of, give him like the little stank eye. He'd go like, we need quiet. They need to go. We need to move on. And and that became more frequent. And I would tell him, I said, Owen, we're not going to have any friends if you just sit there and keep talking to people. We got to move on. I mean, it was just odd. But I thought, Owen, all the things he did, I thought, that's just Owen. So, and things, then it just got worse. And you were asking me about, the things about what I saw. Well, when I really saw things was when, because I was still working, and Owen loved to cook if he could, because he always said I was the best cook. But I would come home because I knew some things were going on, and so I was still working, so I would come home to check on him. And every time I'd come home, he'd be cooking bacon. I
I
mean,
love bacon too,
bacon.
Joanne.
But
Joanna.
no, listen, bacon. And then I'd have bacon for lunch, bacon for dinner, bacon for breakfast. I mean, he was, I'm honestly, I think when supply and demand for bacon went up, it was because of us, because we were the supply and the demand in one household. And then I thought, I go, well, Owen, I thank you, but I just eat bacon for breakfast. Oh no. And half the time it would be awesome, the half time it would be burnt, half the time it'd be like little limp, bacon. And then, I mean, then it turned to Brussels sprouts. I mean, then Brussels sprouts. We had Brussels sprouts, breakfast, lunch, dinner. I mean, my house smelled horrible for like, because Brussels sprouts are awesome, but they smell horrible. And so, yeah, and then little things, other little things. I started to make a list, and because I thought I need to talk to this doctor. So I started making a list. After 1 week, I had 55 items. And I thought, well, I'm just going to stop. There's something up. So, and it was hard for me to talk to Owen about that because he was fine. I mean, even to this day, he's fine in his mind. So what I did was I wanted to protect his dignity. And I knew that if I went into, because I made an appointment with his primary doctor, and I knew if I went in and just started going, blah, 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 oh my, blah, 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 about all this stuff, about what Owen's doing, it would embarrass him, it embarrassed me, and it was just not very respectful. So I composed a letter to Dr. Katzman, and I just told him I wanted him to see Owen, and I listed all the items of all the things that I had noticed and what was going on. And I took it to his office, and I said, please have Dr. Katzman read this before he sees us. So that day when he came in, he knew what was happening. I didn't have to say a word. He knew what was going on, and he knew exactly where we needed to start.
Oh,
And
wonderful.
yes, and so we had a CAT scan, we had blood work, everything, and that's when they found in the hippocampus, signs of dementia. But of course, the type of dementia that Owen has, you can't get from anything. There's no blood test. There's nothing, because it's all behaviors.
And what's
All
it called?
behaviors. It's frontal lobe dementia.
Okay.
And I think, everybody knows about it now because Bruce Willis has it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's how they identify. They go, oh, Owen has FTD. Bruce Willis has that. Oh my goodness, I'm really sorry, because now they understand how bad it is. Yeah.
So how has this disease progressed for Owen?
Well, it's a very rapid dementia. Usually 4 to 6 years is average, but it got so bad where Owen wanted to go out and get the chainsaw, and he started falling a lot. And he fell 5 times within 36 hours,
Oh,
and
Lord.
in the home. And Keaton, my grandson, was we were we would have to get him up, and he was very heavy, because one of the symptoms of frontal lobe dementia is gorging, eating. Yes, and because he was He was drinking out of the pan that I would cook in. He would eat out of the trash.
Oh, my
He
Lord.
would drink salad dressing. And so I saw, I mean, it was almost like he was starving. The good thing about that, the good thing about that is they say, don't worry about it. Let him eat all he wants because in the final stages, he'll lose that weight very quickly. So that's what I told him. I said, let him eat whatever he wants to. You know, if he wants, and I mean, it's not going to hurt him. But he did put on a lot of weight. Yeah.
I remember you telling me about a fall and a finger and how you thought that that was somehow related to the disease.
Well, actually, he had a really bad bike accident. He had a bike accident, and then the finger. He had a bad bike accident in 1997. Yeah, 1997. A dog ran. He rode his bike to work every day. Who does that? Owen did. I mean, yeah.
He
I
was
was like,
fit.
no.
He was fit and healthy.
Yes, he was. And he, yeah, so the dog ran out, hit his bike, flew him into a car. He was unconscious. And after that, they said the frontal lobe was black, which means that it was dead. Yes. But you know, I didn't know him before the accident. So I just knew him after the accident. When I talked to the doctors and they say all that, they said that might have tipped it over a little bit. But he said, but the frontal lobe dementia's probably been there forever. Because I wanted to blame it on something. You know, you want to say, oh, it was the bike accident, or it was when he went up into the attic and came down and his wedding ring caught the hook of the ladder and ripped his finger off. And that was traumatic. So yeah, you want to find something to blame it on, but the doctors are going, I know you want to. He said, but it really probably isn't that. And even this book that I found, that's been very helpful for me, and actually the Bird Center in Tampa gave it to me. Because after, well, after, before I even took him to the doctor, I took him to the Bird Center. And that's they do research for dementia in Tampa. And they diagnosed him pretty much with frontal lobe dementia.
Wow.
Right
And
there.
what's the
Right
book?
there. The book is called Frontal Temporal Disorders. It's information for patients, families, and caregivers, and it's by the National Institute of Health. And
Repeat that one more time, Joanna.
frontal temporal disorders, it's information for patients, families, and caregivers, and it's published by the National Institute of Health, National Institute on Aging, and then neurological disorders, and it does talk about stroke because, but Owen didn't have a stroke. He just has the frontal lobe dementia.
Now, I want to switch gears for just a second. You mentioned Keaton, and I know how dear he is to both you and Caden. He's your grandson that you're
Yeah.
raising and have had since forever.
Since forever.
So how has Owen's disease impacted him?
Well, when we first started seeing signs, Keaton is a very he's very intuitive, and he's I think I call him he's my old soul, but he never got angry. He was very compassionate to Owen because I would just tell him, you know, that he's sick. That's the only way I could say it. He's sick. His brain is sick. And then, of course, there would be times when it would be, you know, Keaton would get angry because Owen always wanted to teach. You know, he was a teacher and then he was a trainer, and he always wanted to teach Keaton something. So he would always go into like his lecture mode. And Keaton, I would hear Keaton go, "Yes, Papa, I know that. Yes, Papa, I won't do that. Yes, Papa, thank you, Papa." You know, he was always very compassionate, you know, and you know, and then after Owen, after he went to the nursing home, Keaton and I just sort of look at each other and go, it's just you and me now. And that was an adjustment. Yeah.
How did you make that very difficult decision to put him in a nursing home?
Well, everyone kept telling me, you need to put him in a nursing home. And I was like, I was the one that told families on the other side of the table for 18 years, you should not feel guilty. You have to take care of yourself. He will take care of him. You can't take care of him at home. I was that one. I was the one that did that. And now I was the one that had to make the decision. And of course, I had no idea the guilt that people were feeling. I was just on the other side of that table trying to make them feel okay because they were putting their loved one in a nursing home. But if I hadn't, at the time that's when he fell 5 times in 36 hours. And so I'm calling the doctor. I'm calling the neuro, we had a neurologist. And the day that she even saw Owen, she said, I can't do anything else for you. I can't do anything else for Owen. It's all going to have to be managed with a psychiatrist. So yeah, it was like, so then after he fell, I said, we're going to the hospital. I don't know what's happening, but you need to go. And he was sick and come to find out he had COVID.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I mean, I worked in the nursing home that whole entire time, COVID, and I never got it. Never. But yeah, he had COVID, so we took him to the hospital. He stayed. We moved him over to the nursing home for rehab. And that's when I remember the day I went in and told him, and I was just crying, saying, you have to stay here. You have to stay here. And he was like, okay, just for rehab. And I was like, yeah, you're going to have rehab. But it was basically to be forever. Yeah. So the first year was tough. The first year was tough because he was in denial.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, how do you explain this frontal lobe dementia, these things that have helped happened to Owen, to just somebody who has no clue, who thinks, oh, he's getting senile, oh, he's older than her. How do you explain that?
Well, you just have to give them examples and the things that they do. Actually, I'm talking to a lady right now in my church. She reached out to me and she came over and we had a talk and she was like, these are the things he's doing. I said, yeah, that's it. You just can't say, oh, it's them, because the symptoms will get worse. And I honestly thank the Bird Center for being there because they do all of their diagnosis for free. You can make an appointment and go. So I always tell people, go to the Bird Center, if you have any. But then they go, well, he won't go, or he won't. And then, I just say, well, tell him he's doing it for the children. You have to manipulate in some way the person who has it to get them to where they need to be. But yeah, you can't overlook things that you would think were just really bizarre because it really could be the something progressive. Because you can't think, oh, they have Alzheimer's. Well, they don't act like they got Alzheimer's, but they're just really acting weird. Well, there's like over 200 forms of dementia. It's crazy. It's just crazy. And the frontal lobe, they call the boss. The boss. Yeah. So the boss says, when do you speak? Inhibitions, filter. Yeah. So those are things that, when I read up on it, I was like, well, that's Owen. That's him. Yeah.
What a heartache.
It is.
What a heartache. Thank you for providing that clarity for me and for us. And thank you for sharing this part of your journey. I know it's hard. So I want you to come back and talk with us about your coping strategies.
Okay.
When I saw you in Tampa a couple weeks ago, I was shocked to find out that this is what you're going through because you still have your joy. And I know this is a tough road, but you're walking it with such grace and humor. Would you consider sharing more with us?
Oh, of course. Anything for you, Joanne. Anything. That means I get to talk to you more and see you more. So, yeah.
Thank you, Joanna, and I'm looking forward to you coming back.
I look forward to it.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.